And this is Coast Community Radio, KMU in Astoria, 91.9, KTCB Tillamook, 89.5, coastradio.org, wherever you are in the world. And that, of course, includes Squamish and East 66th Street, West 54th Street, Corona Avenue, Lander, Wyoming, all over the map. First off, a huge thank you to everyone who called in and supported us or came in or helped out and supported us in our spring membership drive. We closed it at noon today, but you're always welcome to call. There are people here, 503-325-0010, in case you missed it. We raised over $65,000. This is, and welcome to our 50 new members. Yeehaw! This is, I think that's a record for us, and I'm thrilled. Been here a long time, and it's great to see the station just moving right along. And by the way, if you made a pledge and you're due a thank you gift, come on in. The sweatshirts are in. I'm looking at one right now. They're gorgeous, honoring the Tillicum House and the Patty family and everybody with community radio, not to mention the traveling mugs. And there's still a little food out here. Thank you very much. It is time for Arts Live and Local. A personal thank you to Janet, Jackie, Lucian, Chuck and Sarah, Jessamine, Lisa, Marianne, Carol's granddaughter, Sydney in Squamish, Imogen Gallery, Lisa, Mickey, and Brian. Thanks to all of those folks who called in last Friday on Arts Live and Local and helped me to meet my goal. Whew. I'll tell you, it's quite the regime here. Just kidding. Gorgeous day, mostly sunny with a high near 55, tonight 40. Same, oh my God, Saturday and Saturday night and Sunday, sunny with a high near 60. Yeah. Which reminds me, let's give a shout out to children, students all over the country who are striking today to get their elected officials and all those adults who don't pay attention to do so in regard to climate change. Yep. Thank you, children. You are leading the way. And speaking of doing the right thing, I want to dedicate this show a couple of things. First, on a really positive level, I want to send an 86th happy birthday wish to two people, my dear friend Michelle and everybody's dear friend and our guest here in the KMUN studio, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, yes, the Supreme Court judge. The two of them were both born in Brooklyn, same day, same year. And I love them both. Now, for the less happy times, I want to send this out, this show out, to the people who were affected, and I think that involves everyone who has any connection to New Zealand or to decency in this world, for what happened in Christchurch, New Zealand. A shock to them, and sadly, not so shocking to the rest of us.
Thank you. the movies, maybe it's the books, maybe it's the bullets, maybe it's the real crooks, maybe it's the drugs, maybe it's the parents, maybe it's the colors everybody's wearing, maybe it's the president, maybe it's the last one, maybe it's the one before that, what he'd done, maybe it's the high schools, maybe it's the teachers, maybe it's the tattooed children in the bleachers, maybe it's the Bible, maybe it's the lack, maybe it's the music, maybe it's the crack, maybe it's the hairdos, maybe it's the TV, maybe it's the cigarettes, maybe it's a family, maybe it's a fast food, maybe it's the news, maybe it's divorce, maybe it's abuse, maybe it's the lawyers, maybe it's the prisons, maybe it's the senators, maybe it's the system, maybe it's the fathers, maybe it's the sons, maybe it's the sisters, maybe it's the moms, maybe it's the radio, maybe it's road rage, maybe El Nino, or UV rays, maybe it's the army, maybe it's the liquor, maybe it's the papers, maybe the militia, maybe it's the athletes, maybe it's the ads, maybe it's the sports fans, maybe it's a fad, maybe it's the magazines, maybe it's the internet, maybe it's a lottery, maybe it's the immigrants, maybe it's taxes, big business, maybe it's the KKK and the skinheads, maybe it's a communist, maybe it's the Catholics, maybe it's the hippies, maybe it's the addicts, maybe it's the art, maybe it's the sex, maybe it's the homeless, maybe it's the banks, maybe it's the clear cut, maybe it's the ozone, maybe it's the chemicals, maybe it's the car phone, maybe it's the fertilizer, maybe it's the nose rings, maybe it's the ends, but I know one thing, if it were up to me, I'd take away the guns. Take away the guns.
So, wherever you are, stop and perhaps take a minute to think what we can all do to make sure that this doesn't happen, because it's Friday, and what happened in New Zealand happened on their Friday when people come together for worship. That'll be coming up soon. In our community, many people in Portland are coming together today in a vigil and to support their Muslim friends and neighbors, including my friends. Well, anybody who listens to this show knows how I feel about what we need to be doing to make this a better world, to heal all of us, to save lives, and to make it a more beautiful world. And of course, that's art, made out of, in many cases, made out of the trash and the garbage that so many others reject. So my first guests are here to talk about that. I have three guests here to talk about CoAR, that's C-O-A-R. It's the fourth year in our area for the Coastal Oregon Artist Residency. And we've got two artists. The Art of Recycling, but I think this goes way beyond recycling. Annie Eskelin's here from the Astoria Visual Arts. Hi, Annie.
Hi, Carol.
A familiar voice to many of us. And less familiar, although they have been on the air several, at least once, maybe more times, I've got Rhonda Green. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi, Carol.
And Scott Meathy.
Hi.
Nice to see you both here. And they are both with Recology Western Oregon, which is local right here in Warrenton, right? Is that correct? So tell me, or tell our listener, and tell our listeners, what you folks do, Rhonda and Scott.
I am the Waste Zero Specialist for Recology Western Oregon Coast.
Can you say that again?
Mm-hmm. I'm the Waste Zero Specialist.
Waste Zero
Specialist.
Okay.
For the Coast, Recology Western Oregon.
Okay.
It's my job to go around and teach the public and the cities, counties, and entities about recycling, sustainability, and how to decrease our carbon footprint.
Nice. And it's called Waste Zero.
Waste Zero.
That's hard to say, actually. That's the part I didn't catch. Okay, so that's Rhonda Green. And Scott, what's your position?
I am the operations supervisor here on the coast. I manage the drivers, look after the transfer station, and try to fix any problems there might be out there in the community with our company.
Okay. Are there other employees? Sounds like you two have the whole place, kind of stitched up, no?
There are others, yes.
Well, that's good, because yes, it's probably a huge endeavor. The word recology is a little foreign to some people. You want to tell us what that means? You kind of already said it, but where does that word even come from, recology?
It's a kind of a combination of recycle and ecology, and it came about the 1990s, I think.
Mm-hmm. So somebody created the word and the concept.
And the concept.
Is that what the San Francisco thing is?
Yes, we are. We okay. are part of them. We're one big family, yes.
Okay, I wasn't clear on that. So how did that begin, and why did it begin?
The Artisan Residence Program?
Well, the whole idea of putting recology together with art.
It started in 1990. A lady by the name of Jo Hansen approached what was then just the beginning of Recology. It had just become Recology. She approached them about local artists in the San Francisco Bay Area having the opportunity to have access to the trash and recycling that was collected within the San Francisco area. And so that's kind of how it started. And that her main idea, her original idea, was the foundation of the beginning of the Recology Artists in Residence Program.
That must have been incredible. I'm just thinking San Francisco mm-hmm. trash.
Yes.
What would that look like? Were you involved in that? Have you?
I was not, no.
Have you seen what they work with there? I'm just wondering, comparing Clatsop County trash to San Francisco trash.
Right.
Any differences? This just popped into my head when you
said
it. It's
probably all the same, right?
The trash is the same. The volume is much different.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So tell us, for example, what kinds of trash are we talking about? And then we're going to see how that stuff becomes art.
So it is household trash, commercial trash. So everything that is generated in Clatsop County that goes to the transfer station, either up on the tip floor, which is where we unload the actual garbage truck. So that's where Clatsop County trash, residual after the recycle and the good stuff is taken out of it, the residual goes up on the tip floor and then goes to the landfill.
Is that mostly paper or plastic or what?
That would be your recyclable commodities would be paper, some forms of plastic, glass, metal, wood.
So the stuff that people get to put in there.
The stuff that goes in your red-topped bin.
Oh.
Or your blue-topped bin.
Oh, I wish I'd had my camera on on Rhonda just now. You should see the face she made. Red-topped. Got that, folks?
Red-topped bin.
Yes, as opposed to mixing up your bins, putting garbage in your recycling bin, or wasting recyclables by putting them in the garbage.
Right.
Okay.
And that's a big challenge nowadays, to keep your recycle clean. Clean and dry, and what is appropriate for that specific container.
Why does it have to be dry? For example, a can of, a can of peas that I wash out and take the label off.
Then you can put that in your recycle bin and you're fine.
Okay.
The issue we come across is contaminated recycle. So it's containers that haven't been rinsed out that just end up in the recycle, and then that contaminates.
Okay, so when you say dry, you're not necessarily talking about clean water. You're
just talking
about
debris.
Garbage. Okay,
right.
Thank you. I feel much better now because, never mind. But I do always watch things that. So who actually handles all this stuff? Scott, is this part of, when do you come in on this?
So the drivers collect it and we bring it over to the transfer station. And then the transfer station folks, they move it into the trucks to be hauled off to the different places. Recycling goes to a recycling center. Wood goes, to a recycling center as well. The yard debris goes to and gets turned into mulch.
Compost.
Yeah. And then the garbage, we just, it goes into a truck and we haul it off to the landfill.
Okay. And what's the story on recycling becoming more difficult because China stopped taking stuff?
Right. So it has become a challenge. It has. It's mostly contamination. That's been the main issue is contamination.
Fair enough.
Recology does only work with companies that can guarantee that they will still market our commodities as recyclable commodities. So they're not partnering with companies that are landfilling. So none of Clatsop County's recycle is being landfilled.
Okay.
It goes to the proper processor and then they market it as recyclable commodities.
That's terrific. And that's why it's so important that we, the consumers, put it in the correct bin and clean it up.
Correct.
Okay. Now, Annie, what does all that stuff have to do with the Astoria Visual Arts?
Right. So there is a very exciting opportunity here as part of a partnership with Recology and Astoria Visual Arts that's really almost a part of a four-part program. Mm-hmm. I think Astoria is the fourth community to that Recology has started this program in. The other communities, which I love to point out because it just speaks so well about the artisticness of Astoria, is San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, and Little Astoria.
Yay!
Yeah.
Yeah. We're on the map in so many ways, just like this radio station, to be sustained for 36 years in a tiny town, but people from all over take part. So what happens? And why are you here today?
So we are promoting this wonderful opportunity coming up for two artists. The deadline for the core program is coming up March 31st.
To apply
for the residency, okay. Coastal Oregon Artist Residency.
Okay.
And this everything gets submitted online to an email address, and you can check astoriavisualarts.org for the full prospectus. It's also on Recology's website.
And which is Recology?
Recology.com, and you just follow the link to the art program.
Okay.
And it's another way to learn about the other wonderful things Recology is doing that we should all think about more. I absolutely love this program and what it's doing for our community, and also the sphere of influence and the impact that happens for years and years and years that raises awareness about this cause.
And I have to say that I've seen lots of, you know, trash art is very popular these days. But this core program is way beyond picking up pieces of plastic and putting them on a, you know, 12 by 12 inch piece. I remember the very first show, and it was mind-blowing. These huge objects that actually worked, and they were all created out of stuff that would have definitely impacted our environment had it not been made into art. I'm not sure where the art ends up, because some of it's quite large. What the deadline to apply is March 31st. Then what happens? What are these people, whoever?
We have a jury of people. We will interview on April 20th, and from that group, we will select two artists. They'll be notified on the 22nd of April, and then the program starts June 1st.
And how long is it?
It's 4 months. So we changed it a little bit this year. We added 1 month to our program. So instead of 3 months, it's four. And we upped our stipend from a $400 a month artist stipend to $1,000 a month artist stipend.
Wait, so
that's right.
These artists get to tromp around in the trash.
Scavenging privileges.
Mm-hmm. Scavenging privileges. Do they have to sign in and sign out? I mean, how does this work? $1,000 a month stipend is quite generous.
So they have salvaging rights at the transfer station and the recycling facility. Monday through Friday, it can be arranged on Saturday for them to be there if they want to be there. Mm-hmm. And they collect their goods, and then we transport them. They work with Scott, and mm-hmm. Some of the stuff is quite large. Some of it's, you know, kind of cumbersome to move in a car. They work with Scott, and Scott will arrange drivers to get this stuff over to Warrenton, where they have a studio over there in the back of our shop.
Wow.
And that's where they start to create their
this
things.
This is fabulous, huh?
Isn't it? Yeah.
This is amazing. Artists out there or friends of artists, get them onto this. And even if you've never worked in this way before, what a wonderful way to get involved. So now you said, who's on the jury team to pick the artists?
Scott is on the jury. Mm-hmm. I believe Annie's going to sit in this year.
Somebody from the ABA, or maybe a few people from ABA's board.
We have a former artist in residence will sit in, and then a waste zero specialist from McMinnville, and one of our drivers.
Great. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you can see this is a very well integrated program here, which is very impressive for me. Are you working with any other local communities?
For the artists in residence?
Yes.
We work with all the counties in Clatsop County and across the river. We've even gone so far as Columbia County, because Westport is within that 1 hour drive to the transfer station.
I see.
So we've extended it out as far as that. So anybody in that area can work, can apply.
Okay.
We work directly with AVA. So that's a partnership we have with them. And
okay. So folks should definitely go on either recology.com or astoriavisualarts.org and check this out. But remember, you don't have a lot of time. You've got it's about two weeks.
Yep.
And it sounds like a fabulous program that, God, if I had any facility, I'm good at collecting trash, and my house would be a great place to forage, but not making too much art out of it. So, well, my guests, anything else you want to tell us about this, Annie or Rhonda or Scott?
No, I feel we've covered it.
Well,
wonderful
look for
program.
Us at the Anita Building this year. We were there last year, and Harris, who has the Anita Building, has graciously offered us that location again this year.
Excellent. Liz Harris, who is a local artist as well. Yes, now I remember, because I was trying to think, where where it happened. But yeah, I remember from last year, that was so fun.
Yeah, we had a great time.
It's really exciting and innovative. So much imagination goes into it. My guests, Annie Eskelin, Scott Meath from AVA, Scott Meathy and Rhonda Green from Recology Western Oregon. And this is all about the Coastal Oregon Artist Residency, a.k.a. CORE. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks
for doing this.
Thanks, Carol.
Yeah, you bet. And I have some music for you from Three Lake Torso. They're going to be at the Coaster this Sunday. Now, you've heard them before because they're one of my favorite bands, and they come here on a regular basis. However, you probably never heard them play anything Irish. Well, they were hired to do a St. Patrick's Day concert, and Bela wrote and said, "We've been studying away, and we've got it." So I'm going to play a Freilach instead, which is an East European melody that they're so good at, and you'll have to imagine translating it into something for St. Patty's Day. Thanks for being here, folks. KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook.
Thank you.
Sounds kind of Irish, doesn't it, folks? Sure, why not? No, it doesn't. Okay, you're right. That is three-leg torso. I just love these guys. This is from Animals and Cannibals. And that was a Freilich, which is a joyful tune. But they are focusing on Irish music on Sunday, because after all, isn't everybody focusing on Irish music this weekend? And the answer is yes, including Spud and the, what are they called? Spud and the Snake Skinners, Mick Doherty, Sandy Bradley, yes, and Bill Ulig, yes, plus a couple of other bands. They're playing at the Sand Trap Saturday night. So, and Peninsula Performing Arts Center, Marion Sico, good Italian name, playing at St. Patrick's Day concert. Yes, and lots more you'll hear about, hopefully. But right now, I have a special guest in the studio, a good friend who, I don't even know, how long have you been here, Susan Banyas? How long have you sort of been in Astoria?
Coming on 4 years.
Okay. I say sort of because one is never sure about Susan, because she has so much going on in her life and so many skills and talents that she's gone spreading them, including, I'm just going to give a pitch for this, with hopes that she'll do it again, a movement and meditation class that was so wonderful through the college that... I'm hoping it will happen again. So, yes, she's a dancer and a meditator and an artist, so and so and so, and an author and poet. And she's here today because tomorrow evening at Kala, which is 1017 Marine Drive in Astoria, at 7:30, with the doors opening at 7, Susan Banyas is going to read from her brand new book, I mean brand new, Outtakes from the Hillsbury Story, A Kaleidoscope History of Integration in My Hometown. Is that actually... The Hillsbury Story of Kaleidoscope. That's all of the
Hillsbury Story is the title. The okay. Subtitle is A Kaleidoscope History of Integration in My Home Battle in My Hometown.
History of Integration. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Well, and that's why I don't want to trip all over it. First of all, I want to say a huge congratulations, Mazel Tov, on this book. Oh,
thank you so much.
I've been following along, and it's been an amazing story, and it's been very exciting to watch you develop this. So the book launch is tomorrow evening, and I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about the book, about the, this is a nonfiction book. So who are you? What is the story? How old were you when you started? This story started in your heart.
I was 8 years old, and in Mrs. Mallory's classroom in southern Ohio. So the Hillsborough story takes place in Ohio, just north of the Ohio River, 38 miles. And the Ohio River was a section of the Mason-Dixon line that separated the slave state of Kentucky in the south from the free state of, quote, free state of Ohio in the north. So I grew up in a very, the borderlands, and was 8 years old when the Brown decision came down, Brown versus Board of Education from the Supreme Court, and all hell broke loose in my town. What I witnessed outside the third grade classroom window were, quote, Negro women marching and carrying signs with their children they would arrive every day and disappear and arrive and disappear. And this went on for a year. Mm. And at the end of that school year, the first colored girl in my life, Doris Cumberland, walked into our classroom, and that was the beginning of integration, school integration in my hometown.
You know, most people, including myself, don't think of Ohio as a place where this kind of, I guess I always thought of it as a northern state, you know, sort of it's right next door to New York. So
New York had slaves. Slavery was everywhere in the United States.
Right.
And that consciousness that that upheld slavery as an economic system was deeply embedded throughout the entire United States. So to fight the segregation of Jim Crow, it was a national battle. That is lost on people because there's been so much dramatization and drama in the South. But the northern states were just as complicit. And so that's one of that was one of my big motivations for writing this, was to go back. And I did go back 50 years after I witnessed this protest to find the women on the other side of my classroom window and to find out what was going on. And in the process of that, uncovered this big story that is a major American history story, and brought that to light again, and so I uncovered what I would say are the roots of this deep racism in this country by going deeply into the stories of the people I witnessed and people involved and so on.
And you found some of the original women.
Two of the mothers were still living at that time. And now one is still alive. She is 103 this summer.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
And their children, who are my age, and the children of the other protagonist in the story is the county engineer, the Highland County engineer, a white man, who torched the black school in town in 1954, right after the Brown decision, torched it to force integration. He was a radical and a member of the NAACP and had condemned the old building that they were sending the colored kids to school in, that was substandard, had no heat, etc. He torched that and ended up going to prison, and his whole saga unfolds in the book as well.
Is he still alive?
No, he died at 93, right before I got, literally right before I got to Ohio, and it's in the book. There's a little scene about that. But I felt like the torch was passed to me to get that story out, his story.
Wow.
And I did uncover his memoir in the course of writing this book. And so his memoir is woven through this, all the voices of the multiple voices of the mothers, mostly mothers and children, and the attorneys involved, and, you know, all the cast of characters involved in this story.
How long did you spend researching, and what kind of, in addition to learning so much, how did this affect you emotionally or 50 years later and you're uncovering?
Well, it's been a journey. It's been quite a deep journey. And, you know, I felt like besides the fact that we all have haunting memories that are so strong they hang around, you know, until you sort of address them. I mean, that's kind of the nature of my soul stories work, you know, you bring it to light. So this story had been humming away, because of the strength of the people involved in their protest and the nature of their protest. But I didn't know when to bring it into being. Mm. And I also had uncovered in my graduate work my great-great-grandmother's Civil War diary. Mm. She was a Quaker. She lived a few miles from Hillsboro in a farmhouse. in what was, I discovered, a safe house on the Underground Railroad.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so her diary entries indicated that she and her family were a link in the Underground Railroad. So there, that whole piece was also, is also woven through the book, and I had to verify, I had to verify this at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, so I wasn't just spouting off something, you know, bragging about my white ancestry. I, you know, which is a bone of contention in academia, which I can totally understand. The Underground Railroad's often like white people helping black people. In fact, it was a very a strong network. And well-developed network that started with slave uprisings. But anyway, that piece is woven in, into it as well. So I've been working on this. It's been working on me. That's what's been happening. And it finally came into being. I finally stepped into Hillsborough and started doing the actual work of it in 2003. So it's been a while. And then it became theater, and we toured it. And then after the lights came down, after the theater production, I realized that I had only told part of the story. And that's when I wrote what I call the backstory in the book, kind of a theater convention, but where it gets even darker and goes into the geopolitical aspects of this struggle that's anchored here in the United States.
And still is.
And well, that's the invasion of Iraq really prompted me to go back to Hillsborough. 2 months after that invasion, I was like, okay, I have to protest. This is going to be my protest. I will write a protest story, and I will get to the roots of what's going on in this. And so actually, by following the characters and their voices, it goes all the way out there, you know.
And I should mention, because I have heard Susan do some of the readings, and also she doesn't just read.
I don't read at all. I've memorized
actually, and she
no,
moves,
I read some of it.
She moves the language and the action, and hopefully you'll have an opportunity to actually witness Susan. Tomorrow evening is a great opportunity. That's Saturday the 16th at Cala in Astoria. There may be other opportunities too, but the book hopefully is going to be available. And as dark as what we're talking about, it's a very readable book. I wonder, is the book available somewhere, or how would, if people are listening in Kentucky right now, or more likely in New York or British Columbia, how would they get the book?
Yes, it's available through my publisher, which it's Spuyten Duvall Press.
Oh, great.
SpuytenDuvill. That's Spuyten Duvall Press, Spinning Devil, .net. And it's or I encourage people to order from their local bookstore, you know, the usual. But those are my first two choices.
Okay,
or
so
me,
if
you know.
I go to my local bookstore, I'm going to ask for the Hillsbury Story by Susan Banyas, and say that name of the press again? Do they have to know that? Because
okay, it's SpuytenDuvill, Spuyten Duvall, Duyvill.
Okay, got it.
And if you think Spinning Devil, it's actually a place in the Bronx. It's actually a location.
Spuyten
Duvall. It's a Dutch word. Anyway, he has a good literary press, and it's out of New York. So
okay, wonderful. Did you have a hard time finding someone to publish?
I did. I mean, the material's great. The story and the people and the and it is an uplifting story. I know I sounded so dark and heavy, but and the beauty is it's very uplifting. It was hard for a number of reasons. The form it takes. It's written more or less as a performance as performance monologues are sort of written, where a character appears and their voice, and so it's an action-oriented memoir, It's not a pure memoir. It's a memoir and interfacing with documentary art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's an integration story that looks at integration on many levels. Mandated integration all the way into your own, my own heart and soul.
And over a long period of time.
Yeah, which it takes a while to integrate, as we know, and to heal from these things that cause trauma, you know, in our lives. And we've all experienced trauma to varying degrees. So it's really looking at this unrest as something that is deeply embedded in us because of where of being human and growing up in this culture and so on. So all of that is woven into it as well as the actual history.
And besides words in the book, are there?
There are images, a lot of images.
Yeah.
The publisher was very he's a wonderful publisher, and he wanted all the images in there.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's a text and visual book as well.
So, and I hopefully this book will appear at the library as well, our local library, as well as all of our local libraries. So you could take a look and then for sure get your own copy. Will you have any tomorrow night to sell?
I will pre-sell tomorrow night.
Okay.
Yeah. I will have the proofs there, and you'll see the hardcover, the soft cover in color, and the soft color in black and white. And they're three different prices. So,
great.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah.
My guest, Susan Banyas, check her out. Do you have a website?
Myname.com.
Okay.
I confess I'm in the process of redoing it, so it gets a little wild, but if you get there, you'll see the gist, and I will.
And Susan, Banyas, Banyas.com. Check her out because she is an amazing human being doing so many creative and healing arts, as well as being... I don't know how she appears in so many places, but she gets around and makes us all feel good, too.
Oh,
the Hillsbury Story is tomorrow evening at Kala, 1017 Marine Drive, and that's a 7:30 show. The doors open at 7. Thank you so much, and I am really looking forward to getting my own copy of the book. So,
thank you so much, Kala.
Thanks,
I really
Susan.
Appreciate it. Alrighty. Bye.
I have a little. I have a little more music, and then, I have one. Well, I have three more guests, but one more idea. Yes, it's St. Patrick's Day coming up. This music is from an album that I got in Ireland when I was there, called Peace, actually, and have a listen. Stay with us. those pipes. Oh, yeah. Just last week, I had some Irishmen on, one of whom played the Illan pipes. And that was a fun concert, too. Oh, Lordy, there's so much going on. A couple of plays opening tonight. The Coaster, Living on Love. NCRD, Three Weddings and an Elvis. And, oh, and hey, I just have to tell you that tonight at 10:15 at PPP, that would be Peer Pressure Production, at 10:15 Commercial, that's obviously 10th and Commercial, it's Bill Hamm, KMUN programmer, and the best actors in, male actors, I should say, in Astoria with 13th Night, or whatever you say. Needless to say, with Bill Hamm involved, it's hilarious. Right, Kim?
Yes, it was.
We were sitting next to each other this morning. My guests now are here because they're all part of the Astoria Writers Guild, and they don't have a lot of time, but they're going to tell us what that is and what's going on coming up on in Astoria March 26th in Portland, that weekend. So, Kimberly O'Brien, and who is also a Guild board member, I understand, and Ryan Hume and Andrew Zing. Hi, guys. Oh, where's your microphone? Sorry. Yes. Let's. Yes. Okay. You can move it.
Looks okay.
Yes. All that right. That looks okay. Good. Sorry. That's my job. But there's so much going on. So, you three are all writers.
Yes.
Actually, Andrew, I don't know much about you. Of course, yeah. Ryan, we all know because he writes for all the publications and runs Rain Magazine and other such. And Kimberly can be seen and heard at the Rick's Open Mic. Do you write prose as well or mostly poetry?
Yes, prose and poetry, Carol.
Okay. And Ryan, do you write poetry?
Once a year.
For a special occasion?
For special occasions.
I see.
Yes.
Okay.
Mostly prose.
Okay. And Andrew, what do you write?
I write prose, nonfiction.
Nonfiction. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yes. Now I remember who you are. I mean, I recognized you.
From the other side of the wall,
well,
right?
I recognized you from KMUN, but yeah. I'd forgotten what you were doing here. So, the Astoria Writers Guild, somebody, maybe Kimberly, because you're a board member, or any of you, tell me what it is, why it is, and then who is Francisco Aragon? I'm not sure how he says it, but what a beautiful name. From Nicaraguan parents, Californian, incredible writer. You're going to tell us something more about him. I'll just say that on March 26th, which is a Tuesday, he will be here at Winecraft in Astoria, which is the foot of 10th Street, where Rick's Poetry Mic takes place, 6:30 to 8, and that's open to all of us. Or you can go to Portland for the 27th through the 30th. But hey, why would you do that when you can see him right here? Tell us about Astoria Writers Guild, and I understand you're all going to be reading for that event in Portland or the event in Astoria?
In Astoria.
Okay. What is Astoria Writers Guild?
So the Writers Guild is a 501(c) nonprofit here in Astoria, dedicated to strengthening literary arts here in the community. And working with some underprivileged people and at-risk groups, as well as just anyone who's interested in writing, we offer workshops, and there'll be three coming up this spring, including one I'll be teaching. So if you want to look into that, we've on the website. Marianne Monson's brainchild, correct?
Yeah, so. She came into this town and just whoosh.
Yeah.
Writing's the game, and we're going to whip it right up to speed.
And if you, with the Writers Guild, it's a $65 membership.
Okay, we don't even talk about money
okay.
here. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's off the air. But is there a website folks can get all the information?
There is, www.writersguild.org.
I think that sounds right.
That's pretty simple, writersguild.org.
Uh-huh.
And if that doesn't work, try.com, or just type in Astoria Writers Guild and you'll find it. Now, I know Ryan, well, I think, Ryan, you write for a living, don't you? Or do you have a day
job? Well, I try to.
Yeah. That is, you get paid for your writing because you publish in various places.
Yes.
Andrew?
Yeah. I just finished my MFA in creative writing down at Oregon State University and just finished up. And yeah, I do a mix of writing and teaching and try to, you know, make ends meet.
Where are you teaching?
I'm teaching up at the college.
Okay. Yeah. You look like a high school student. That's why it's so hard to put this together. I guess you might too, Ryan, except you've got to. Anyway, Kimberly, I've known too long.
So yeah, thanks, Carol.
You could pass, but not with me.
Yeah.
So who is Francisco Aragon? And why is he so special and featured?
Yeah, he's a poet, bilingual poet, who's coming to Oregon for the AWP Writing Conference, which is a national writing conference taking place in Portland this year.
AWP.
Yes, that's the Association of Writers and Writing Programs, I believe.
Okay. It is. The W does, it's a load-bearing W.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Maybe a couple W's should be in there, but we're not going to get too nitpicky.
That's okay.
But that's like our big mecca for writers, and he's coming for that event, and he reached out to Marianne, who's our boss in the Writers Guild, and said, hey, well, I'd love to do a reading in Astoria, and we put this together.
Lovely.
He's an award-winning poet, and he's coming to read for us for free at Winecraft, and there'll be some Astoria writers, including the three of us, performing alongside him.
Well, it's 6:30 to 8, so I would hope that you wouldn't make him read for an hour and a half. So nice of you guys to join in. Have any of you read any of his work?
Yes, his writing is amazing, Carol. It's really good. He's a fantastic poet. I think it's a real treat to have somebody like him here in Astoria and a night where most people can go. It's, you know, not competing with the Friday or Saturday night event. So.
Right, or even Wednesday or Thursday.
Yeah.
Around here anymore. Yeah, it is exciting to bring someone from outside the poetry nights used to do that once in a while, bring in a guest, as well as have open mic, the way they do at the Hoffman. And so this is exciting and maybe the beginning of more things going on. Mm-hmm. Astoria Writers Guild has been going how long, do you think?
I mean, just a year, I'd say, since Marianne came to town.
So what now? I know you come to the Rick's Poetry.
Yes.
What did the rest of you do? And what was the rest of the writing community? Well, you're brand new in town. So,
yeah.
Okay, Ryan, it's all on your head. What did people do? Because it certainly is nice to be able to get together with others plying your trade or your art.
Oh, yeah. I think, it's necessary to recharge the batteries. So much of our work happens alone in a room, that having that community really shows you new voices, it shows you new approaches, and just kind of gets you back into that room re-energized. So, I think the Writers Guild is doing that. It's also offering a new generation the ability to see that community and to grow that community.
So beginners can join you guys, right, and see what it feels like to be part of that. How many folks are involved-ish?
It varies depending on the meeting, I would say.
Sure.
But, it can be anywhere from a handful to, a dozen or so at each meeting. It's nice to have a kind of intimate space where we can talk and share ideas and share work.
Do you have any younger than Andrew people?
who are your not LA friends that came last time? They look pretty young.
Yeah, there's some other young writers for sure.
Well, and I think last time that Ryan was here was for Rain Magazine.
Oh, correct.
Which was pretty cool.
I got to bring a student.
Exactly, which I really appreciated. So.
Well, and one thing about the youth, Carol, is that we're going to be working with Tongue Point and also Voca, so there are
excellent. Uh-huh. Excellent.
Yeah, we're trying to get more young
high
people
school.
In the fold.
Yeah. Well, just the way the AVA does, time for the writers to stretch out to. Well, thank you, because that's terrific. My guests, Kimberly O'Brien, Ryan Hume, and Andrew Zing, will all be reading at Winecraft on March 26th, that's a Tuesday, from 6:30 to 8, and hosting Francisco Aragon, who I read the write-up on him, but I don't have it in front of me, so I highly recommend checking this out. Sounds like a wonderful evening. And then join them in their writing. I just, I have like 30 seconds. I want to, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you,
I want to just let folks know, in addition to the shows opening up in the Labor Temple tonight at 8:30 has comedy with Noribo Ott. And Sterling Gorsuch at 6 o'clock tonight at the Cannon Beach History Museum. Tomorrow, Fire Mountain School, 5:30 p.m. at the Old Nehalem Fire Hall, has their Shake, Rattle, and Roll raffle. Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum has a quilt show tomorrow. It's over for today, but tomorrow and Sunday, 10 to 4. It's always fabulous. And Kala, of course, has Susan Banyas. Hoffman has a poetry fest, which is all weekend. On Saturday from 4:30 to 5:30, our poet laureate, Kim Stafford, whom we all adore, will be reading.